It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis has the day off, but Gina Trapani's here with the perfect guy to discuss the shutdown of Google Reader, Kevin Marks. We're talking about it next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 190, recorded March 20th, 2013. Leave it to Bieber. This Week in Google is brought to you by Podio from Citrix. Manage your products with files, instant communication, and collaboration all in one workspace. Start using Podio today. It's free. Just visit Podio.com to sign up, set up your first workspace, and invite your team to get started. Work the way you want to with Podio.com. And by Ting.com. Ting is a new mobile phone service that just makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay for what you use. It doesn't require a contract, and you'll get unlimited devices on a single pooled plan. Save $25 on your first Ting device. Visit twig.ting.com. That's twig.ting.com. And by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic, continuous, unlimited backup for your computer files. Just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com. And use the offer code TWIG. You'll get two bonus months with purchase. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show that covers the Googleverse and everything else in the cloud all around it. Jeff Jarvis is on assignment, joining us from his garden, Kevin Marks. It's great to have you.
Hi, Dad. Nice to see you.
Tumblevision.tv and Salesforce.com. Man has been everywhere, including Google. He's worked for everybody, Apple, Google, British Telecom. Nice to have you, Kevin. Gina Trapani is also here from smarterware.org. Where are you, Gina? Are you in Brooklyn?
I'm in Brooklyn today. I'm on the road for business. I got on a plane right after All About Android last night, so Chad was confused.
You look like you're in Brooklyn. It just...
A lot of green walls here.
Yeah, it just feels like Crown Heights or something. I don't know why. I just has that feeling.
Something like that.
Anyway, great to have you both. As we went to press, so to speak. I don't know how podcasts go to press. As we rolled tape. Well, that's even more anachronistic. Google released a new product. Right on our watch. Thank you, Google, for doing it before, not after the show.
Yes, shutdowns after, launches before.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. They shut down Reader right after the show, didn't they? And Andy Rubin moved on right after that. We'll talk about both. Well, we talked about both.
No, we talked about Andy last week.
Yeah. Google Keep. It's now in the Android store. This is something that we had seen some rumors about a couple of days, maybe yesterday, because it would accidentally appeared on your Google Drive. If you go to Google the Play, you can download it for Android. But you can also go to your drive.google.com/keep. It is kind of an Evernote clone, killer? I don't know. Look at that. Chad has pasted in some settings for webcam settings. You could type. It doesn't look like there's a whole lot of types, different data types on the desktop. But on the Android store, there are. You can take pictures. You can record audio. And, of course, you can type text. It is very Evernote-y.
It is very Evernote-y, although it has the classic Google. It has the Google Now card design, their cards, and you can actually move the cards around. So right now, if you're looking at it right now, things are slow. I've just gotten an account and an error. Please reload. I think this is just the launch rush that's going on right now.
Everybody's getting Keep.
Yeah, everybody's trying out Keep right now. But it looks like there are checklists. You can upload images, you can do just straight up notes.
And it syncs very quickly.
And it syncs. Yeah.
So I took a picture on my phone. About a minute later, it showed up on my desktop, vice versa. Kevin pointed out it kind of looks like Pinterest. At least one of the layouts. There's a list layout.
The phone, yeah.
Yeah.
If you do it on the phone, it tiles them up.
Yeah, tile layout as well. That's just modern web design. Everything's tiles nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Keep
it
is
does
kept.
Seem that way, doesn't it?
Look at that. So if you're Phil Lyman and the Evernote crew, should you be worried?
Evernote's been at this a really long time.
Looks like it's not very good at rendering SVG.
You tried to upload SVG, some vector graphics.
Yeah. Well, this is.
If it's HTML5, that would work, right?
Well, it should work. Yeah, the browser, they should just embed it. But
right.
So this is. I was going to do this as a number, but I may as well say it now. I realized that there are more browsers now support SVG than support Flash.
Wow.
Hmm.
That's huge.
SVG support is up to 83%, according to caniuse.com. Whereas Flash is harder to work out, but I added up the browser percentages using the same browser that they have there, a browser that could actually support Flash, and that was under 80% because the newer Androids, the iOSs, and the latest Safari ships without it turned on by default.
And now we know why Kevin Lynch left Adobe, the man who was responsible for keeping Flash alive at Adobe for so long, and went to Apple, the number one Flash killer.
That's not really fair. I think one of the things that Lynch has done at Adobe is redirect them to not creating runtimes themselves, but to use HTML. If you saw their product launch last year, their entire tool chain now is devoted to generating HTML and SVG and CSS and all this stuff.
But how much of that is because of Apple making them
do it? Oh, a lot of it is because of Apple. But the other thing is, you know, that they've also moved to contributing to WebKit and to Firefox,
right?
And bringing lots of all the rendering engine stuff into the browser core, as opposed to being in their magic runtime that's stuck on the side.
So Adobe saw the light, and presumably Lynch was the guy who implemented. He's as CTO at Adobe.
Lynch was the guy speaking and saying HTML5 is the future, and not mentioning Flash at all at that
interesting
event.
Interesting.
I went to in December. Yeah.
So it makes sense for Apple to hire Lynch because what are they going to have him do?
That's a different question. I'm not sure. I'm assuming, you know, that they want to understand the cloud-based stuff. The other thing that he's done is do a big redirection of Adobe such that a lot of their app stuff is cloud-based now. That was the other part of the, you know, the
Apple needs
part of the
people who get the cloud big time.
Yeah, because they don't.
Yeah.
They don't. iCloud is horrible. Back to Google Keep. That was a little side note because, and actually, it's interesting because they made that announcement right after Mac Break Weekly yesterday. It was one of those, so we haven't had a chance to talk about it. But thank you, Kevin, because you're kind of up on this stuff. You knew the answer to that, so that's good. Thank you. Google Keep. They do say it will show up in your Google Drive later this week or next.
Your Keep Notes will show up in Drive?
Yeah, I think somebody said that in the chat room. I don't know if it's
under the Drive URL. Yeah.
Yeah, so
it is a Drive URL. I mean,
so it's got to be Drive.
There's a real-time API. So.
Yeah. Will there be like a file on your Drive called Keep?
It seems like, there'll probably be a folder or something, right? This appears to be a Drive app.
It says there is a widget for a Keep for your phone. It says drag your notes around. You can choose the color for each note. Pro tip for adding thoughts quickly without unlocking your device. There's a lock screen widget if you're running 4.2 or higher. So you can keep stuff without unlocking.
So you're walking down the street, you get an idea, you note break out self. Your phone, and you just note to self and talk to yourself.
I have to say, I'm an Evernote evangelist. I love Evernote, used it for years. This could easily replace Evernote for me. Oh, you know what's missing? I know what's missing. Encryption. There's no way to keep anything private on this. It's all, you know.
And there's no sharing. So there's
no sharing.
Encryption. There's no sharing. And also, the thing that I use in Evernote the most is Clip to Evernote, is saving web pages to
right.
Evernote.
Presumably, I would like to see a Chrome extension for this, and presumably that would add that capability.
Yeah, it seems like that. This seems pretty inevitable, doesn't it?
Yeah. In fact, so does encryption and everything else. This has got to scare Evernote. I mean, whether it's going to be an Evernote replacement or not, it's like the old days when Microsoft said we're going to do something, everybody went, oh boy, that's just get out of that space quick.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, look at Reader, right? I mean, Reader kind of leveled the RSS client market there for a while. It was great. It was, came out of Google. I mean, part of me is like, Evernote's been doing this for a long time. Evernote's a great product. Evernote is really far into building kind of specific apps for specific purposes on top of Evernote. So they've got like that food app and that, you know, personal CRM app that kind of stores in Evernote's. And this is kind of what Google's doing here, right? Keep is kind of like it's a Drive app, essentially. The Drive app built on top of Drive. But I don't know. Evernote's been at it for a long time, and it's a great product, and it's seen a lot of success. I'm not sure if they have to worry about this yet. What's strange about Keep, I mean, for a company that's so that's working so hard to be focused and shutting down a lot of apps, getting close to the bone with Google, with Reader. I mean, it's interesting that they're launching something like this, especially something like this that's slightly redundant. Like the checklists in Google Keep look a lot like Gmail tasks, which is one of these lesser used and lesser known features of Gmail, which has really not gotten a whole lot of attention since it's launched. I mean, I've been waiting for a really good Google task manager for a long time, and it seems like they're kind of pecking at these, you know, kind of productivity apps, but didn't quite get there with the to-do list. Although these checklists here in Keep look really nice.
What do you think the killing of the so very public killing of Google Reader, does that make people a little shaky about putting stuff into a new Google tool? Does that hurt Keep a little bit? Because
among the nerds, I think so.
I don't think it's just nerds. I think the killing of Google Reader had a more widespread effect, ripple effect.
You think that people beyond nerds were like religiously using a newsreader?
Not that they were using it, but they were aware of the fact that there was a howl of pain when 100,000 voices were suddenly stilled. It's hard not to feel that disruption in the force, even if you don't use it.
Luckily, you know, RSS is a standard. And what was that? You just take
picture of Jeaner. How did you get that picture of Jeaner?
You just took a picture of your screen.
He's not hearing us now all of a sudden.
No, sorry, you just dropped out for a sec.
Oh, okay. We're back. How did you do that? What did you do?
That's my lock screen widget.
Oh, you got the lock screen widget. Oh, neat.
Nice.
That's why you use a Nexus 4, so that you can use these things.
Nexus, whatever the other thing it is. Galaxy. This is the one from Zip. Yeah.
Look at that.
So there's Gina on there.
How to add widgets on here. Android has gotten
so weird. You got to go into the application drawer and then tap the widget tab.
Uh-huh.
And then you got your widgets and then you drag them into the screen.
No, but to put them onto the lock screen, though.
Oh, the lock screen. So you lock it and then you slide all the way right.
Oh, all the way right. And there's that plus sign. Yes.
And a plus sign
you.
Right in there. Yeah.
I do a show about Android.
Yeah.
Ladies
well,
gentlemen.
That just tells you. That just shows you.
It's not the world's most obvious UI.
There's some complexity here. Yes.
There's this new thing, this new sliding UI. Everybody's doing it. I just got the new BlackBerry phone, and there are no buttons. There are no menus. You just slide. Mm-hmm. And Windows 8 is all about sliding, swiping in from. Who was it came up with swipe in from the edge? And why is it ubiquitous all of a sudden? I don't like it. I don't like it one bit.
I think it's one of the few kind of gestures that's easy to detect on a touchscreen, on a small touchscreen device. I just think there are like
the hardware
a limited
determined
number of gestures that you can that are universal.
Right.
That you know you can detect.
Right. It's the hardware determined it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lauren Brichter invented it. Did you see that Wall Street Journal piece on Lauren? That was cool.
I didn't see that. I didn't see a piece.
Oh my God! They called him a user interface god.
Because of Pull to Refresh, or
yeah,
I mean, he's done lots of good work.
Yeah, Jessica Lesson writing in the journal a couple of days ago. Well, let me see if I could find the article here because it was a huge pain. How do you pronounce that, Mr. Ephesus? Pain, P-A-E-N, to Lauren Brichter.
High priest of app design.
Yeah, high priest. That's what they call him. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Lauren is the guy. He worked at Apple. Then did Tweety, which is absolutely amazing.
Right, which Twitter purchased.
Which
right?
Twitter purchased and destroyed. So Lauren went on to do a word game. But apparently people call him all the time now.
He's not going to have any trouble getting a job anytime soon.
Yeah, no, and he's a consultant. You know, people go, oh, Lauren. But he invented these pull down to refresh.
Pull to refresh. Uh-huh.
The swipe in and out. In fact, they talk about all the little things he popularized.
And did Twitter patent the pull to refresh? Or did he patent the pull to refresh?
Ah, well, that's an interesting thing. So he's at Twitter now, I think. Or did he leave? But Twitter did patent it. But then they always, when they say, they do their patents, they say, but the person who invented it has the right to tell us not to use it offensively or something.
Oh,
weird
they're right.
Like that.
They have the IPA. Yeah. Not the India Pale Ale, but the inventor's patent agreement.
Right.
Right. Mr. Richter filed the patent that pulled a refresh feature before joining Twitter. Oh. The patent expected to be issued soon is now owned by Twitter.
Oh, it is owned. Okay.
But he says there are ways to build this feature using open source software, and he is long giving anyone permission to use it as long as they aren't a
some word that begins with dick. I mean D.
Some word that Will Wheaton uses a lot. Right, Twitter lets the inventors of its patents veto using them in offensive lawsuits.
Is this the new version of Frand, is it? Okay.
Yeah, Frand.
Fair, reasonable, and not a dick.
Not a dick. Fair, reasonable, and not a dick. That's what Frand stands for, isn't it? That's Franad. It's another kind of Frand. So, this is a good article for anybody interested in UI. He really created a lot, but he did not create the swipe in from Edge. Or maybe he did. I don't know. So there it is. Keep. You know what? As long as we're doing that, let's take a break and come back and do the changelog, because there's more changes to your Google. Lots of new features. And Gina Trapani will have our changelog in just a moment. But first, a word from Citrix, the creators of a brand new product called Podio. P-O-D-I-O. As you know, one of the biggest problems we face today is information overload. We've got, if you're working in business, you've got projects, you've got teams, you've got data all over the place. It's in your email, it's in spreadsheets, it's in documents. It's disorganized, impossible to manage, and priorities changing. It's hard to kind of keep track of those. Podio does all of that and more. It lets you work the way you want to. It's a way to escape email overload. But you still use your email. You still use your Google Docs. You still use everything you've been using, but it combines it into one stream. You can completely customize your workspaces to manage your products, bring your team together, coworkers, clients, external contacts, whoever you want. And you can work with the mobile apps too, which are really great on iPhone and Android. It's great for CRM. It's great for projects. There's a Podio app builder so you can build your own apps, but there's also a massive app store filled with wonderful free apps that you can add for every possible project. Combine all of your information, all of your team into one easy-to-use workspace. And you know what's great? It's free. Go right now to podio.com. Free. But I ask you, when you go there and sign up to create a workspace, attach your Facebook, your Google, your LinkedIn, whatever you're using, add a workspace, add your team, invite them to try it, and see what you can do. iPad, iPhone, and Android apps available for free. Podio.com. Podio.com. Really, a really neat solution from the folks at Citrix. Sign up for free. Podio.com. And now, ladies and gentlemen, break out the trumpets. It's time for the changelog.
The Google changelog.
And now with the log, here's Gina.
Well, it makes a lot of sense that Google just launched Google Keep, because Google announced this past week the Google Drive real-time API, which essentially gives developers the ability to build in real-time character by character as you type updates to their apps. So this is really only news for developers, although there are a couple of apps out there that already use this. It looks like Keep uses this. There's also an app called Neutron, which is a code editor, a collaborative code editor, so you can store your code files in Drive. And this is great for something like pair programming. There's a project management tool called Gantt, which also uses live updates to the drawings app in Google Drive, and draw.io as well. So Google Drive real-time API at work in Google Keep. So it makes a lot of sense that Keep just launched. What else do we have going on? Oh, I was sucked into an image search.
We could barely get Gina back.
Everyone was in a deep discussion about web video formats, and I was looking at animated GIFs of Justin Bieber because Google has added animated to the list of image types that you can search for in image search. So if you run a search for images like Grumpy Cat or Leo Laporte or Justin Bieber, you can select from the type of file that you get back. There's a new option called animated, so you can say,
where do you do that? I can't, I don't see it. Where do I select?
So images.google.com, it's, I think they call it the tool belt. So let's try this.
Ah, here we go. Any type. So you use search tools. I get it. If you look at mine, chat, or you're doing it. All right. Any type, animated. then it will show you all the animated. But it doesn't animate the GIFs. You have to go there.
It doesn't animate them in the tiled results list, which probably is good because that would probably cause seizures. You have to click on an image to see the animation. I kind of was disappointed. I wanted to see all the animations happening at once, but that's probably a good UI choice.
Yeah.
Because if they were all moving at once, it would be distressing.
Well, also, browsers tend not to let you scale them while they're animating easily, do they?
Yeah, it probably wouldn't work all over. Here's me as a from Fark.com as a max headroom. This is actually what's going to happen.
I like that one.
In a couple of years, this is all that's going to be left of me.
I like that
People are capturing images now so they can create the max headroom. This is fun.
On the other hand, that you will make so much revenue from the blipverts, you'll be fine.
Yeah. Oh, thank God for blipverts.
This is exploding.
Right. This is good. This is fun.
Yeah, fun.
So, again, it's not immediately obvious, or it wasn't to me because I'm a fool. You do the image search, but then you click the search tools. See, you know what's missing here? So when if I look at this web images, maps, shopping, more has a downward triangle. Okay, that indicates if I tap it, there'll be more. Search tools, I don't know what's going to happen when I hit
that. You don't know what that is. What a search
tool. It's a UI.
Right, it should be like filters or...
Maybe dot, dot, dot would let me know that something's going to happen when I tap it.
Yeah.
Something. And then we get underneath, we get a new menu bar that gives you size, color, animated, anytime. So that's the thing, is it wasn't immediately obvious. If you tap that search tool, and then you can search any type, face, photo, clip art, line drawing, and the new type is animated.
Animated.
Emanated.
And the Grumpy Cat results are also worth looking at. We have a new Gmail for Android update that came out this week, and it takes advantage of Jelly Bean and ICS rich notifications. So now when you get notifications about new email, you can pull down the interactive notifications in Android's window shade. You can reply or you can...
We may never know what you can do.
You can
Hold on, you see what it is?
There we go. You froze for a moment there, Gina. You can reply or what?
Reply or archive.
Archive, okay. Mm-hmm. I love rich notifications, by the way.
But they only work if you get one email at a time. Otherwise, they collapse into three like before.
Oh.
But can't you pull it down? Can you do the two-finger pull down and expand them?
No, then I just get the three still.
So this is the Gmail app. You can't use the Mail app in Android. You have to use the Gmail app for this to work.
So right, this is the Gmail
app. Hope that I get a single email in at a time.
Well, what you can do is you can set up your notifications to only notify you if, say, you get important messages.
I do the VIP.
VIP messages.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I turned off my Gmail notifications because it's just too much. But I feel like with these notifications, I might just filter down from my business partner, my mom, you know, just from the real important people.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm doing now. Yeah. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. I should play with that, yeah.
Turn my notifications back on.
Yeah. And,
but now how do we I don't see a way to narrow those notifications down. Is it in the general settings? No, it's
looks like
just notifications on or off. I can make priority inbox the default inbox. I guess I presume then that will give me what I want. Priority inbox, send and
all income messages, only important, only messages in certain labels, right? So you have to set up a label.
Ah, label notifications. I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So if you have like a VIP label, then you can say only notify me for messages in this label.
There we go.
Where's that hidden? Is that on the desktop or is it on the phone?
Is it on the desktop, Gina? Or
it's in the app on the phone.
It's in the app, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in manage labels.
No, I'm looking in
settings.
Maybe I need to check for updates.
I'm looking. Huh. I think the
if you click priority inbox, sound and vibrate. No, but that's label notifications are turned on now. But I don't know how to narrow that down. I don't want to notify for every message.
Right.
Oh, maybe label notifications means notify, use labels. I don't know. That's kind of ambiguous.
Okay. So I'm going to work on this.
Yeah, we'll figure out. There's definitely a way. I'm actually looking at the very helpful answer.py file here.
Using
that tip from last week.
It just says, with Gmail app for Android, you can choose that you're notified of incoming messages, set up your notifications. Okay, so only messages certain labels. In the Gmail app, touch menu, then settings, choose an account. make sure the box next to notifications is checked.
Ah.
Touch manage, so you have to manage do that. Labels.
Okay.
Touch manage labels and then touch inbox and make sure label notifications is not checked.
Oh,
use
boy.
Your back button to get back to
you
your list
sure
of labels.
You can sure do
this. Is
this.
An 11-step. This is,
no
this is an 11-step
problem.
List of instructions, folks.
And then, button to go back to
choose
what?
Choose one
and then
of your
what?
Labels. Touch sync messages. Choose either sync last 30 days or sync all. Check the box next to label notifications.
Okay, I've done that. Now what?
Okay, now
I'm
choose
lost.
How
what?
You want to be notified with the following.
Right, sound, button. Vibrate, now. Notify for every message. Right, I don't want that. Okay.
And repeat for any label you want notifications for. You can choose different ringtones for different labels.
Got it.
Wow, that was a journey into the settings of the Gmail app, was it not?
I'm still lost.
You're still lost.
Oh, okay. For label notifications inside priority inbox. Okay.
Whatever. Let's say
there?
You can do it. Continue on.
Okay. All right.
let's accept that as written.
Let's move on. It is there. It is deep. It was deep in the bowels. Do a nice search in the Google support pages, and you'll find it. But it is indeed possible to get notifications for only certain labels.
Perfect.
Google Plus is getting a new Hangouts app called Capture, which lets you snap pictures of your Hangout as you're talking. So, I honestly don't use Hangout a whole lot. They're calling it an app. I think what that means is that it's just a new button in the toolbar on the left side menu within Hangouts. This app is pretty well done. I mean, it does more than just take a screenshot of a Hangout. When you take a screenshot, it lets everybody in your Hangout know that you have indeed taken a picture. It automatically shares or saves that picture into your Google Plus and shares it with all the people who are also in the Hangout so they can look at the pictures as they're being snapped. And you can view the photos while you're in the Hangout, and you'll know when it's in use, right? So it's a difference between if you're in a Hangout and someone uses Sketch or someone uses some other way to take a screenshot, you don't know if someone's taking a picture of
right.
you. But this app
right.
actually notifies you and lets you know, hey, Pose will take a picture. So it looks like a cute app, I have to say.
Cool.
Nice way to remember.
Cool.
Kind
do
of funny
you,
moment.
Do you do a lot of Hangouts?
I don't. But every time I look at it, I think I really need to do this with my family
too.
More. Because I do a lot of video conferencing, like with Nona, with the family, especially now with the baby. I don't know why we wouldn't just use Hangouts.
Yeah.
Part of it is
what
just
do you
like,
use, Skype?
I do use Skype and FaceTime just because the family relatives have iPads. So
right.
FaceTime is kind of like the easiest experience there. Or I'll use Skype. But it seems like Hangouts is a really good option, especially with all those funny effects and stuff. I feel like the kids would love, the mustache and the horns and then the glasses, the little effects that you can add to people.
Yeah. I've used it quite a bit.
And also,
if you're wondering, once you snap a picture, it also shares underneath the Hangout. So when you see the, hey, a Hangout's going on, here are the people in it, there's another little drop down
images.
Of photos.
Oh, I like that.
So you could see, this was going on in the Hangout.
Fun.
Yeah, exactly.
They're having
yeah.
fun. There are mm-hmm. people who are having fun.
Right. Well, don't you want to join?
Right.
Oh, sorry, there's 10 people in there.
Sorry.
You can't join.
FOMO.
Sorry.
Oh.
FOMO.
FOMO.
Sometimes fun is FOMO.
Having so much fun. You wish you were here.
Yeah.
All right, two more last things. Google Maps gets the 7 summits. I had never heard of the 7 summits, but they are the highest mountain on each of the 7 continents is now in Google Maps. So are you talking Mount Kilimanjaro, Mount Elbrus, Mount Everest? You can go to the peaks of these mountains on Google Maps.
Can you believe this?
In Street View. It's kind of amazing. Really,
they must
really
have
amazing.
Had a Googler who was like into mountain climbing.
So
right?
Some Googler came up with a brilliant idea there. I need to go to the 7 highest mountains around the world.
Yeah, it'll be my 20% project, really.
This is clearly some bucket list checking off going on here.
Yeah, wow.
I can't imagine hiking these mountains with those huge, enormous 360 cameras on my back. I don't know how heavy those things are, but these are some serious hikers that did this.
Well, especially Everest.
Yeah, yeah.
Caroline McCarthy just went to Kilimanjaro, but I'll bet she's left Google now. Okay.
I seem to remember having read that there was one person at Google who was an avid mountain climber who had made this happen.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. Last thing, and Leo, you probably talked about this. I don't know if you talked about this with Steve Gibson, but Google has implemented DNSSEC validation on their public DNS service.
Yay.
So this is the Domain Name System Security Extensions. Let me make sure that I get this right. So this means that Google's public DNS resolvers actually do validate whether or not DNSSEC requests are indeed valid. They used to just forward those requests. What this basically means is that just on top of SSL, this makes for a more secure internet where DNS resolution is verified within Google's public DNS servers as well. I hope I didn't mangle that too badly.
I think that's perfect.
Great. Yeah. And that's it for the changelog.
There is, by the way, there Google Maps folks on Google Plus had a hangout with the mappers that you can go back and watch. Talk the seven people talking about mapping the world's highest peaks.
So they had one hiker per mountain?
I guess. I don't know. There's seven people, seven peaks.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to our very special hangout today. We are celebrating our special collection with Street View of the world's tallest peaks. So today we have some of the most famous and highest peaks around the world.
That's cool.
The Everest Base Camp.
So I'm glad, you know, it's nice that Google uses their own tools to do corporate communications, things like that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, so much so that the Google blogs are kind of going away. I mean, it's mostly all Google Plus. They're making new product announcements on Google
Plus.
Why not?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, now that Reader's gone, that'll be a better way for me to prep for the show.
Is that it? Do we get it?
Is that
all of it?
That's all I got.
That's
all of it.
The Google changelog. And I presume next week we'll mention Babbel, because there's all this rumor flying about Google Babbel, a new unified messaging platform.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. Do you think it's going to happen before I.O.? I hope so.
Maybe they'll do it at I.O.
Perhaps they'll do it at I.O. That seems like a big enough kind of I.O. announcement.
I guess it is something we need, because you've got messaging in Google Plus, you've got Google Talk.
Yeah, Google Voice.
Google Voice. I use that all the time for messaging because as kind of an alternative to text messaging.
Mm-hmm. There's like your phone's SMS messaging, your Android
phone.
So
if they tie that in, essentially that then it becomes the equivalent of Apple's Messages app.
iMessage.
iMessage.
Right.
I think it's called Messages now.
Oh, is it just called Messages?
I think they dropped the I, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Babbel... I guess this is a leak coming from thegeek.com. They quote numerous sources. Chat for Drive. I've never used that. There's Chat for Drive, too.
Oh, yeah. In the doc chat.
Well, we use it all the time.
The sidebar. We use it all the time. Yeah, so you didn't even know it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but we do use it. When we're all in the dock, we'll chat with each other. Say, you know, wow, this is a really boring show. Stuff like that.
No, it's more like, Chad, I can't hear anything.
What's going on?
But now, yeah, I didn't realize how many messaging products Google really has until I read about this. I was like, oh, yeah, this makes complete sense.
Presumably, it all sits on top of XMPP, so not so difficult to implement, right?
Right. I mean, they've got there's the XMPP thing that they use all over the place. And this has been around for a while. Google has it, and Plus and Orkut all had the little pop-up chat window.
And I actually love XMPP. Jabber was an XMPP client. So it's an open source platform for messaging, really more than chat, messaging of all kinds. We've thought for a long time that we would use XMPP to do some sort of river of textual information associated with our shows. We set up the backbone, but we never really kind of pulled the trigger on that. Do we still have our XMPP server running? I think we do. Twit.im?
I'm not sure.
No one knows. It's just sitting there. No, Bear says
it gets a lot of use.
Bear said it was turned off. Oh. Babbel will almost certainly use XMPP, since I think all of those Google services do. In fact, Google decided to block non-native XMPP requests.
Well, or throttle them, I think it was.
Throttle them, okay.
They will only allow so many per day from a certain domain.
Interesting.
Because they were getting a sort of spam bot domains that were attacking them.
So it's Google's BlackBerry Messenger. No, that's a mean thing to say.
I mean, if it's built on XMPP, that's good. That means
it is good. It's extensible, right?
Someone in the chat room said they're dropping AIM, but I thought AIM was built into, they had an AIM bridge in the chat thing, at least, not that I've actually tried using AIM recently, but.
Microsoft's killed Messenger, so there's one fewer things yet to worry about.
They've converged on Skype for that.
Yeah. Does Skype use? Skype uses its own transport, right?
I don't actually know.
Yeah.
And yeah, the other sort of, you know, subtext of this is WebRTC enables some of this too.
Right.
There's a data channel in that can be used for chat.
Right.
There's a text channel and a data channel in that.
For some reason, I just feel like this is a very, that people don't make phone calls anymore. They use text messaging, and that's such an inadequate system, not to mention expensive, because the carriers really gouge people for text messaging, that there's just a natural value in some sort of unified messaging service. Goodness knows, services like WhatsApp do really, really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do, but as long as you can chat, as long as it doesn't...
It needs to be cross-platform. It needs to be everybody.
Yeah, it needs to be cross-platform. As long as it doesn't lock people out into Google services, right? So, which is what Messages does on iOS. Like I've heard from people say, I want to switch from iOS or Android, but I depend on Messages or messaging, and I can't move.
Right.
It bridges to SMS, but that's it. So yeah, you're stuck with SMS for the non-Apple people.
Right. Right.
Right. But it's weird if someone sends you, like, so if you use Messages at one point and someone sends you a message, like I used to use it, I don't anymore, and then every once in a while I'll be like, oh, someone sent me something a while ago and I just never got it because it doesn't forward, just the iCloud email address. And it's frustrating. It's like, oh, this isn't an open standard. I can't log into this with any chat client. Someone in our chat room just said, oh, people use AIM, LOL. And I think I still use AIM. I mean, I don't even know what I use. I just use Aidium, and I log into Yahoo Messenger and AIM, and I logged into everything.
Yeah.
The 5 or 6 chat, you know, accounts that I set up 5 years, 6 years ago, 8 years ago. I don't think about it anymore. You shouldn't have to think about the protocol.
That seems like a kind of a kludgy solution. The Pigeon, AIM, Trillion, all of these... multiple protocol clients.
Well, that was the problem was that this stuff didn't converge. There was a time when everyone was trying to interop, and then there was a massive back and forth war between Microsoft and AIM, where Microsoft would implement the protocol and AIM would change it, and eventually gave up.
Oh, I remember those days.
And then AIM licensed it to Apple, which was in iChat, which was good. That was nice. Then you had that did Jabber as well, and then Apple sort of damaged that, never brought it to the iPhone, and then they reinvented it again with iMessage. So Apple's been lagging on this for a while, whereas Google's picked up on Jabber fairly early on and then built AIM integration into that. So it makes sense to try and pull this together, and XMPP is a decent protocol for doing it, I think.
Who better to do it than Google, really? Maybe Yahoo? Yahoo just bought a client called Jibe. Let me look this up. J-Y-B-E. Right. Oh, that's a recommendation site. I'm sorry. That's not related. Recommendation site.
What was the one you were thinking of? There was some other one you were thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One with a J. I don't know. Another one of these.
Jabber.
Nope.
No. Jabber's open source. But Yahoo, people use Yahoo as chat. People use Yahoo chat still. Jive. That's it. Is it Jive?
No, not
Beehive.
Something else.
Beehive.
Jitsi. Thank
Jitsi.
You. Thank you, Vince360.
Everybody, getjive.com. Get Jive.
Fortunately, we've still got IRC, so we've got a chat thing that
Thank
actually
God.
Works.
IRC really works. Wouldn't it be great if we could just unify everything under IRC? That was actually one of the neat things about Pigeon, and I think Trillion did this too, is you could have an IRC channel in there along with everything else. Beehive is Beehive, but it's pronounced Beehive. Never mind.
I am so confused.
I used it. It's a multi-chat client. I think on multiple platforms. Anyway.
Oh, Beehive.
Oh, Beehive. Oh, Beehive. Oh, Beehive. Chat room is my externalized brain, and they are actually now having a psychotic break of some kind. So... Moving on, Google may be readying a newsstand-like feature. We've got Google Music, we've got Google Books, we've got Google Play, maybe Google News or Google Play News with issues and subscriptions. This is coming from the Next Web.
And only the sound of a car driving by. who's dying to subscribe to...
More magazines in a different platform.
In a different platform.
Why?
Do you read? Do you read magazines on your iPad or your tablet or anything? Where do you, or do you pick them up in the newsstand and read them in, you know, in paper form?
I've been sort of interested in the mini sort of publishing thing that's been going on with like the Marco Arment's the magazine and 29th right. Street Publishing with you know, with Y'all and Weekend Companion, and I did subscribe to a couple of them, and it is good content, and I do like the interface. I just sort of suffer from a too many gadgets problem where
right.
you know, I just have a Nexus 7, I have my Galaxy Nexus, I have the iPad, I have my computer, you know, I just don't know what to pick up yet. So honestly, they do sort of stack up unread on my iPad. The way that physical magazines would as well in my house.
Oh, I get the New Yorker on my iPad, but I never read it.
You never read it. Yeah. But it's there.
It's there if I ever get, you know, bored or lonely. I got the New Yorker. I got 800 issues in the New Yorker. But, I, you know, the funny thing is I still subscribe to the paper New Yorker. But at least I feel, yeah, it's just more stuff not to read, isn't it?
Spectator and Kindle, but I forget to read it.
Yeah, The Economist is another one I get. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is Amazon, should Amazon own this? Then we wouldn't have to worry about Apple and Google having incompatible
well,
formats.
Well, Amazon has this too.
Yeah.
But
shouldn't they own it?
It's locked inside Amazon. So, I mean, you know, they just need to be EPUBs and they need to be HTML and then they work and we don't have to worry.
That's the way to do it. But nobody's going to do that because they want to control it.
Well, they are EPUBs, but they're all trying to wrap them up in DRM nonsense.
Right. Well, maybe the things like Marco's the magazine, but the magazine's just another silo, isn't it? I know you've written for it.
I have. And yeah, in many ways it is, right? It's on one platform. You have to pay for it. You can't. I think there's a way to share links to articles, but it's kind of limited. It's so many clicks or so many shares that you can give. Yeah, it's a silo. It's true.
Yeah. I've read it.
You know what? There's this thing called the World Wide Web. Works so very well. It's a standard. It plays back on every platform. I look at the Atlantic Monthly, which made the decision to go web. I suppose they have an app, but they have the web, the magazines on the web, and it's just a great way to do it. And then, oh, it would be really cool. You could have some sort of aggregator have a list of all the articles, and then you could do, you could scan them and quickly look and see what was new from all the different sources. And what's going on? I mean, it seems like we're moving backwards.
Right?
We're moving the wrong way.
Well, it's a difference between paying advertisers versus having your readers pay you, right? I mean, Marco's actually, like, he's making a lot of money for the magazine, enough money to pay his writers really well. There's zero ads. It's completely, you know, trimmed down.
It's not, what is it, 99 cents a month, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. I recently unsubscribed because I never read it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? He's sort of depending on people who are either voracious readers and big fans or like really plugged into that community, or he's depending on people to just forget that they're subscribed, right? Yeah. I mean, Apple sends a reminder email.
It's hard to forget. Like, iTunes makes it easy to cancel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Much easier than other platforms. They let you know. They remind you. You've got a subscription. There's a subscription area. I could see all the things I was paying for, and I said, oh, yeah, I don't want that. Oh, yeah, I don't want that.
Yeah.
It's too easy.
You know, it's so cheap, though, I think. Well,
right.
You know,
I might read it.
Maybe I will read it this month. It's only $3, you know, or whatever it is.
Google acquired Telaria, which I'm sorry, I don't think you should name a company anything that rhymes with malaria.
but says the guy who runs a company named Twit.
I know. You're right. I'm the wrong guy to ask. Telaria was building a, quote, new dynamic web application server with a JIT-based runtime at its heart. It'll become part of the cloud platform team. I don't even understand what... I don't... It was on PHP, which is a little odd. But I guess because WordPress and Drupal are in PHP, it makes sense.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's just more HTML5... JavaScript stuff? Is it just, it's an acquire. They're hiring these five people.
I hope they support PHP and App Engine, though. I hope that's what this means.
Ah, they don't currently.
Nope. Well, you know, Google's the Python company.
Right.
Yahoo's the PHP company.
I bet you're right. This might add PHP to Google Cloud Platform.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, you know, if there's the possibility of a web store or a market where you just deploy cloud-based apps, like say, hey, give me Drupal, give me WordPress, give me ThinkUp, give me Feed a Fever, or, you know, any of those sort of PHP, you know, install yourself feed reader apps, some of which are in the running for, the, you know, replace Google Reader.
Continuing his tour of totalitarian-based dictator-run countries, Google Schmidt is going to Myanmar. I don't know why. It'll be the first high-level executive from a U.S. technology giant ever to visit Myanmar. 60 million people. Remember, he was in North Korea last month. Is Myanmar still run by the military junta? Are they still...
Yeah, I think so.
No, it's nominally civilian. The government is nominally civilian. It says under the they're no longer under the military government, so it's opening up. Ah, so this might be a good place to go. The government's pushing mobile phone ownership. It's 9% right now. They hope to get it to 80% by 2016, which means anybody in the mobile space is going to have
big growth.
So that's why Eric went there. That makes sense. U.S. Treasury Department regulations still prohibit American companies from dealing with a list of more than 100 individuals still considered cronies of the former military regime, many of whom continue to hold powerful and influential business positions. So you have to be a little careful. There are still sanctions, but things are opening up in Myanmar. I didn't realize that. That's good.
Yeah, it looks like that's the place for Schmidt to be.
Yep. Chromebooks Glow Global, now available in Australia, Canada, France, Germany, Ireland, and the Netherlands. I'm still waiting for my Pixel.
You need a countdown behind you.
Well, they don't tell countdown. You, right? If you go to the Play Store, it says, yeah, you ordered one 2 to 3 weeks. There's no tracking or anything. Because I ordered the LTE version. I wanted to have always-on internet on my Pixel. But I will review it.
If you cover Google I.O. on a Pixel, that would be awesome.
Yeah. There you go. We can Skype from the Pixel.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. The Pixel, does it use Skype? No, you have to use WebRTC. Right?
Or you can use
Google Talk or Hangouts.
If you, I could put Linux on it. That's what Jeff was doing. It actually worked quite well. Yeah, it worked quite well. Have you used a Chromebook, Kevin? Are you a Chromebook fan? Or?
I haven't. I've got one of the ones I got, the original one, that I use it every now and then. Yeah,
CR48, yeah.
No, the one we got last year.
Oh, the Samsung, yeah.
So year before, whenever it was. Anyway, that sits around at home. I keep it charged. I use it now and then. If we got someone visiting, then I'll, you know, and they want to use the net, I'll give them that to play.
That's
with.
What I did. So, I gave away my Chromebooks to people who needed computers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've still got the Chrome boxes. Nobody seems to want those.
You can't. Can you? I don't see those on the Play Store anymore. Can you still buy those?
Oh, I don't know.
Yes, you have to go to Amazon. It's not
you can buy them on Amazon.
Well, they didn't do them. It wasn't in the device area.
It was
in
never
Play Store.
The devices.
Yes, it was like the Samsung Chromebooks that you went to Amazon.com and bought them.
So the Pixel is still U.S. only, I believe, but they are going to make the Acer, the HP, and the Samsung Chromebooks available, as I said, in Australia, Canada, France, Germany, Ireland, and the Netherlands. I didn't realize that they weren't widely available internationally. You know, Google tablets are other Google devices.
I went ahead and made you a countdown, Leo. Just
good.
Arbitrary, what?
10 days, 249 hours, 14,972 minutes, 898,352 seconds.
Yeah. So, you know, two to three weeks, right? So
It's in there somewhere.
I bet it'll come exactly.
Yeah, what is the site?
So this is timeanddate.com.
Oh.
And you can... You can create these cool little,
timeanddate.com.
Yeah. And so you could even make it go, you know, if you wanted to.
I just discovered time.is, which I really like.
I also love World Time Buddy as well. There's a lot of time-based
people
websites
on the internet
out there.
People
we don't
on the
know.
Internet love time and they love weather.
Yeah.
It's just data. It's constant data, right? It's like...
Yeah.
The thing about time.is... Time.is it will tell you how close your... It's very accurate, and it will tell you how close your clock is on your computer. Very accurately.
Oh, my clock. Wow.
Yeah, see?
So yours is 4.8 seconds ahead.
Yeah, how much was
mine
yours?
Mine is 1.1 seconds
See, there
ahead.
You go. Because we're both using some sort of automatic synchronization. And then it's,
we're gonna need
and then you see
second.
The latency issue, which is actually
so
surprisingly
low.
It's
like half a second. Yeah. It's like half second latency between your screens and mine. That's interesting.
Oh, I don't know how they're doing
this.
Normally, when you do something like this, client side, you're getting the.
I'm more amazed that you have some sort of thing with our fonts are different. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm on Windows.
Yeah, it's Windows. Yeah.
I'm on Windows. It probably doesn't have that font.
Oh, hello.
Yeah.
Helvetica.
We can laugh.
It couldn't do Arial. No.
I don't know. What are you asking me for? Well, I don't know.
I'm more amazed that it's a serif versus
Ask
a sans serif.
Balmer. I don't know.
Like, that's two completely different. Anyway.
I know. I don't know. Yeah, I'm getting a serif. Really, you're not. Maybe they think Windows people need serifs. You know, that's. I'm in Chrome. I wonder what it would look like in Internet Explorer. Let's try that.
Oh,
it says Arial sans serif on the styling. So they.
Yeah.
Chrome is ignoring it then. So. Chrome is ignoring it. Let's see what the Internet Explorer. No, it's. And an Explorer is also a serifed font. That's,
okay.
What I wonder what Metro is. this is one of the most wonderful things about the lovely time.is. Is no Metro is also a serif. So I have.
So it's rendering a sans serif as a serif. That's just weird.
It's wrong, right? You shouldn't.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, you just said you looked at the style
Arial.
Sheet and
it's
Arial. Asked for Arial.
Bad.
It says Arial sans serif, yeah.
All right, hold that thought, because before we talk more about the Goog and the Beeb with the Gene and the Kev, let's talk about the Ting. Ting. Oh, I love Ting. Ting.com. Actually, if you go to twig.ting.com, you get a special offer. What is Ting? It is a new mobile phone service that just is done right with integrity. No BS. You know, you never pay more. There's no ETFs. There's no contracts. You never pay overage charges. You never pay penalties. You get credit on the service you don't use. And if you use more service than you thought you would, no problem. You just pay at the same rate you would if you'd bought it in the first place. No add-on charges either. What do you get from Ting? You get voicemail. You get caller ID. You get tethering. Tethering, part of the deal. Hotspot, part of the deal. And unlimited devices on one plan. So go to twig.ting.com and find out more about what Ting can do for you. You know, it's a fun one to go is the calculator, the savings calculator there on the menu item. Bring your phone bill, your current mobile phone bill, because you can compare how much exactly the same service would cost from Ting. Now, Ting uses the Sprint network. So if Sprint works where you are, and it does in almost everywhere in the country, Ting is a great solution for you. You can bring your LTE device to Ting, by the way. Sprint has now opened that up, and Ting is, of course, going to take advantage of that. If you have a Sprint device from the list of supported phones, you don't need to buy a new one. Just bring it over to Ting. And you can just change a couple of settings, make some updates, and you'll be saving right away. Ting is an amazing thing. Let's do a little Ting plan just to show you. You pick how many phones you want, any number of phones on the same shared service, but let's say it's a family of four, $6 per phone per month. We're going to use, let's say, shared 2,000 minutes, 1,000 text messages, and I'll show you why it doesn't really matter what you pick in a moment. 3 gigabytes of data. And I mentioned hotspot and tethering automatic. That's $124 a month for all four of you. And the beauty part is, if you use more, you just pay at the standard rate. If you use less, they rebate you what you paid. So if you go right now to twig.ting.com, sign up today. You're going to love it, and you'll save $25 on your first device, too. All the major, you know, hot phones are there. Twig.ting.com. Good riddance to that lousy cell phone company you're using. Ting is the thing. Try it today. You're going to love it. What do you think what free stuff are we going to get at Google I.O.? By the way, we got to get Kevin in, right? Kevin asked me if he could get in. Can we get him in?
Oh, yes.
I didn't even get an invitation.
You did.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, so I've been talking to the Google I.O. folks trying to get. They say that Jason Howell has one, you have one, and Jeff Jarvis has one.
And Gina's on her own recognizance.
Right.
Okay.
So if one of those three doesn't want to go,
I've been talking to
Jeff.
That's
what we did last time. Kevin Marks was me.
Right.
I was talking to you.
There's a possibility that Jeff will be somewhere else in out of country.
Jeff's going back and forth as he did last year.
Right. So he doesn't know yet.
Because we're going to do the show. We've decided, Kevin, to do the show from there. So I will be going this year.
Okay. Oh, sweet.
That's good.
Yay.
Didn't we talk about that last week?
Yeah, we did. We did. But it's definite. Are we going to set up at Moscone, or will there be like a studio nearby, or we'll just go around and do interviews kind of inside Moscone? We can figure it out later.
No, it's not for a couple of months.
I got really excited. Sorry, we'll talk about that later.
I don't know.
I'm really excited that you're going to be there, though.
I am too. I'm really looking forward to it. That's why I'm asking what free crap I'm going to get.
Leo's going to parachute out of a blimp and.
That was amazing. That was amazing last year with the Google Glass. Yeah. I got to figure Glass is going to figure prominently this year at I.O., right?
Yeah, but we still haven't gotten our Explorer editions. It's interesting.
Yeah, I want my Explorer. Yeah. You know, here's my theory. They only asked for $1,500 guarantee because they wanted to make sure you're really into it. Once they're going to give it to everybody at I.O. for free, including us.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe not. Maybe they can't afford to. You know, Google's been strapped lately. I don't know. It'd be kind of nice.
They're building Wi-Fi hotspots all around Moscone to accommodate the 6 Wi-Fi enabled devices that they're going to give out to every.
Ooh, yeah. So, yeah. Bring the Wi-Fi down.
They'll have those people with the dishes pointing at you to make sure your glasses
are right. Exactly.
That's what they did.
Dishes as they walk by. That's
as
what
he jumped out of the plane. They're aiming the dish at the guy coming down. So that's a good point. We probably should find a studio because I bet you there will be no internet access at Moscone.
Yeah, we should talk off air.
Does PixelCore still have its...
We can just talk about it now. So I have been emailing the Google I.O. folks, and they just don't have a... I asked for a space on the floor, and they just can't provide...
No.
A space
we'll
on the
find
floor.
A spot.
There's a few different options.
We could go over to the Samovar tea room.
Well, there's also like... The W Hotel, we could is like Wi-Fi across the street. You know, we could.
The Samovar tea room guy likes us.
All right.
Yeah, but they don't have Wi-Fi there, so you have to bring your own Wi-Fi with you.
Oh, I thought they did. I thought they were going to. We talked about doing a show from there before. They had bandwidth.
I don't remember.
It's not Wi-Fi. Maybe it's just. Maybe we just plug into the kitchen.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe that's what happens. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I've done the show from there, I've sat there with the Verizon thingy box and used that.
Liz Gaines, writing for All Things D, talks about the future of search, how search is evolving finally beyond caveman queries, the conversational search metaphor. So, for instance, Amit Singhal talking to her said, he pulls out his phone, he says, how old is Justin Bieber?
12.
And then, or whatever. And then
not according to his shirtless animated GIFs.
Oh, baby, all grown up. Then he asks a follow-up question, how tall is he? And, of course, a smart, you know, search will know. It'll know. 5'7", by the way, which is kind of short.
Hey, I'm 5'7".
Yeah, but you're a girl.
I could take Bieber.
He's a shirtless Bieber.
Come at me. I definitely come at me, Bieber.
The shirtless Bieber. That sounds like something you'd see in an Audubon bird manual. The shirtless Bieber calls to its mate.
I really am a lesbian. It just was one of the suggested searches.
Oh, well, you're in trouble. Your credentials are now suspect, young lady.
I know. Well, he sort of looks like a girl, so I justify
believe me.
My
judgment. Nobody, nobody is. If you hadn't said anything, I wouldn't have thought a thing. If you said you were looking for pictures of, you know, I don't know.
Just in case my wife tuned in to me talking about searching for Justin Bieber.
Honey, I wasn't looking at Justin Bieber naked.
It's also like a little bit pedophile. There's a little pedophile thing going on there because he is kind of young still. I think he's 19. He's of age, people. But yeah,
he is 19 years old.
Suggested searches.
5'7", 19 years old. Somebody should tell Liz Gaines about these new info cards at Google because it told me all that just when I typed in Justin Bieber.
Right, the knowledge graph, right?
It's
so knowledge
good,
graph knows,
yeah.
Like, hey, you're talking about this person. This is a right. This is a pronoun. This is a person.
It even tells me when he's playing near me in San Jose, June 26th. Let's book those tickets now.
Okay, I'm not gonna search for Justin Bieber because it'll show up in my Google Now for the rest of the time.
It does, and now I'm gonna see Justin Bieber concert announcements in my Google Now.
He's dreamy though. I mean, let's be honest.
People who search for See, this is where you don't have to worry about your credentials, Gina, because people who search for Justin Bieber also search for Selena Gomez, Taylor Swift, Rihanna, Miley Cyrus, and Nicki Minaj.
Not a boy in the bunch.
Nope. Now I've got to look for animated GIFs.
You got me started.
Which one do you like? Amazing. Which one do you like?
Any one of those.
Any of them.
Teenage girls apparently spend a lot of time animating the Biebs.
Animating the Biebs.
Let's see. It's loading. It's loading.
Yeah, it takes a second.
Oh, hey, girl. Aww. Hey, girl.
Aww. Hey, girl.
Hey, girl. Hey, girl. Hey, girl. I believe. Let's try another one. Well, how did this love you like a love song, baby.
Oh, no.
They've even got like a little ghosting on that.
That's interlacing on that one.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. I don't know where to go. Happy New Year.
I like the ones that add sort of cheesy graphics on top.
Yeah. This isn't moving. He's mine forever. Hot.
In either sense of the word.
Yeah, see that's
this,
the cheesiness.
This
I love.
Okay, is why this is why God invented animated GIFs right there.
It's like we don't need MySpace anymore. We have Google Image Animated.
What?
In love.
Who needs Tiger Beat? We've got Google Image Search.
Yeah, exactly. Tiger Beat better be worried.
Woof. Yeah.
I just think of how many years I spent working on digital video for the net.
I know. This is what you have wrought. Thank you so much, Kevin Marks, for bringing this to us.
Well, no, the depressing part is we're still using animated GIFs because it's still bloody hard to get video that works across platform.
Because
patents.
Right. Wow. Patents. You and I got to talk to you about something. I want to know about the early days of QuickTime because you were there at the beginning, right?
Yeah. I was there before it was public. Well,
there you go.
I was not at Apple, but I was in the seed before it went public. Yeah.
The new Galaxy Note 10. We had a review yesterday on Before You Buy. Russell Tammany. I saw one gorgeous screen. Here's the new ad for the Nexus 10, titled "New Baby." So this would be a good one for you, Gina. Let's see.
Yeah.
Yeah. What to expect when you're expecting. They're all using Google Plus. We've got a little man on the way. What's his name? Alfie, Kevin. We're working on it. Apparently the husband and wife don't actually live anywhere near each other, but thank God there's Google Plus. Oh no, there they are together. 1-6. She's starting to show. Softball league, childbirth classes, your choice. Calendar collision. Oh, shower. The name is Kevin. There's mom. Swollen ankles, remember that part.
Great man named Kevin.
Great man named Alfie.
Alfin. They combined Kevin and Alfie, and they named him after a chipmunk. Holy Magoli.
But interesting that they were showing off user switching there. So the mom had an account, the dad had an account, and then they had a family account.
Oh, that was the point of it.
That was the point of that ad. Yeah, it was interesting.
Thank God you were watching, because
the tagline was the Nexus 10, the shareable tablet, meaning it's one tablet for the entire family, which is interesting. I think it's a compelling feature just for that reason. Yeah. This is the tablet we have hanging around our living room, fighting about what we're going to name our kid and
the price of
having our baby shower.
Apple would disagree. Apple would say, no, as you said, Kevin, you can afford to have one for everybody.
Well, no, you can with the Nexus. You can, I can buy 3 Nexus 7s for the price of a
single iPad.
I'm not quite. The Nexus 10 is like $400.
Yeah, it's so Apple. It's
that's,
Apple priced.
So expensive.
Yeah, it's Apple priced. We did talk about Google Reader shutting down. There've been petitions, hundreds of thousands of signatures. Nothing. Nobody's. That's not going to change anything.
No. Leo, what did you think? I know Jeff was pretty upset about it. I saw Jeff ranting. I was imagining the bumper of Jeff ranting on Twitter saying, you know, Google.
Did they close Reader after the show? So we haven't talked about it.
They did. We have not.
Oh.
They closed it right after the show. I think it was a Friday, one of these Friday news drops.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of buried in one of their spring cleaning bullet point lists.
Did we talk about Andy Rubin?
It was buried in the Pope.
We did.
Okay.
Did talk about Andy Rubin.
I'm so confused. So Andy Rubin was first, and then... They killed Google Reader. So 500,000 people sign up for Feedly. I signed up for Feedly. It is not a Google Reader replacement. I'm sorry. It's okay. It's too pretty. It did import all my Google Reader content. And so the one that I often do is tech news. And so this is kind of Google Reader-like.
This looks very readery.
Yeah, I guess it is.
There's old Reader. That's the one that looks like Reader. Theoldreader.com.
Who's theoldreader.com?
Oh, the old Reader, yeah.
This was made a while back when Google broke sharing. It said, oh, you've got to share on Plus, but it doesn't actually work. The old Reader said, well, we can recreate that. So if you go there and import your subscription, it has the sharey stuff that
funny.
That Reader used to have.
And that, now, can and they that scale up to like accommodate it. all the unloved Google Reader users?
That's the question.
Because there is some server side, quite a bit of server, is there not, Kevin? What's involved? What is the cost of running a Reader service?
Well, so the challenge is the crawling, and the reason that Reader sort of took over and became the central sync point for everyone, it was because Google does it as a side effect of their main web crawl, which means that they're crawling the entire web all the time anyway. They've got very good at knowing when things changed, and so that is a lot easier than the classic. Feed updating problem. So the feed updating problem is the point of a feed is it gives you a list of the articles and you know when they've changed, but you still have to check the feed. And so you have to go and check the feed every so often to see when it's updated. And the way we used to do that was we had ping servers, so-called. There was several of them. Dave Weiner ran one. We ran one at Technorati. There was a couple of others.
I remember that, yeah.
And you would put the URLs of those into your blogging software and it would poke that and say, I've just updated. The problem with those became that spammers would just ping them all the time. So by the time Dave Weiner sold the Weblogs one to VeriSign, it was like 95% spam. Because I was at Technorati at the time, we would read all the fire hoses from these ping servers and then run them through spam filters and decide which ones to make sense. And it was very hard to get utility out of that. So there was a spam problem with those. So, and then, we were trying to build protocols for sharing stuff, basically a sort of big shared ping server thing. There's one that's plugged into WordPress that I've forgotten the name of that does a fairly good job of this. And then there are also the big blogging platforms have their recently updated pages or feeds that you can plug into. There are two or three ways of doing that as well.
You can also do it client side, can't you? With like a client app like NetNewsWire.
You can do it with a client app. Yeah, that was the other way of doing it. But the challenge of that is that you've then got lots of client apps hitting your blog all the time. So you've got a popular blog. And you've got 100,000 readers. You're getting 100,000 people crawling all the time.
So it's a hardship on the blog.
So it's a hardship on the blog, and it's a hardship on your phone if it's polling everything all the time like that too. So there's value in doing it as a cloud side service, I think, in the cloud. And there's also value in amortizing that crawl across lots of users, which Google was effectively doing. And also because they're crawling the whole web anyway, they were very good at telling when something had actually changed. It's quite hard to work out what's really going on because time zones, people have their clock set wrong, and people change something and suddenly their entire feed gets republished and a whole bunch of stuff like that happens.
Yeah.
So when I was doing the Technorati crawl, there was it was like, oh, look, this thing's in the future. It was a common problem.
It's a very common problem, yeah.
You can trust the time. You know the time you crawled it, but you don't know the time they published it.
Right.
And Google's crawl is big enough and comprehensive enough and not blocked by anyone, so they were very good at crawling everything. They effectively displaced the entire infrastructure there because they would let you tap into it. And it wasn't a formal API. It's a sort of undocumented backend that lots of people use. And the team informally connected with them, but they never went through the official Google API process
to put it out there, which means it's not going through the official deprecation process where they say when they'll turn it off. It's just going to vanish when they turn the product
off. It seems like Google should keep this going, if only as a public service, right?
That would be nice.
Not for people who use Reader, but because it is doing this crawling anyway. It could really offload blogs.
There's a group that was formed called Open Access Coalition, which is semi-related to this, that Kevin Burton of Spinner and what's his face
does so much these days. He's really too busy. I think he should stop doing so many things. Seems like he's doing almost everything nowadays, especially.
Do you think you should keep the product? You think they should keep the entire product running as a public service, or just the unofficial API? I mean, since the API was totally unofficial, I don't know.
Greg Kidd of 3Tabs. So they've put this openaccesscoalition.org to fight for the ability for people to write web crawlers. And this is an important issue. The reason Google exists is because you can crawl the web and download the stuff and make sense of it, and people don't restrict that. Neil wrote about this week as well, about we should have weird user agents, because the user agent is the client-side app you use to connect to the web and make sense of it. And a lot of sites are now saying, we will only let you connect to us if you're one of these known browsers. Facebook does that now. You can no longer...
Really?
If you try and curl a Facebook URL, it'll say you don't have a recognized browser.
Wow.
So this crawlability has been reduced. Also, people, you put a lot of stuff in their robots.txt that says only the Googlebot can crawl me.
Right.
Which is tricky if you're, Blecko, or if you're Bing or somebody else trying to crawl them.
Right.
So, yeah, there is a problem here. Now, there are some other crawlers out there. There's obviously Bing. If Bing wanted to steal a march on Google, say we're now the open company as Google's the closed company, we'll provide this API for people, this what feeds have been updated and which ones have changed API for people as part of our crawl, and it would probably help their crawl as well, because they would get, then people will be motivated to plug things into them.
Open up.
Yeah, so I can see that if someone in the Microsoft side of it, thinking about it.
Huge opportunity for Microsoft. They're already crawling the web.
They're already doing it. So it's just like you just write a MapReduce that feeds this stuff out to the site, which is all that happened at Google. The reason that Reader could be built by three guys at Google was because they could use the existing crawl.
Microsoft, there's a guy right here who knows how to do that. He'll write you a MapReduce, no problem.
I'm just saying, I write my MapReduce.
He's probably done it a few times already. Take an old one. Like,
so then the other thing there is there's this group called Common Crawl, commoncrawl.org, which is a crawler that dumps its data into an Amazon thing, and then you can run scripts against it. So that's an interesting project. I know I've seen Pete Warden has done some interesting stuff with that. Hmm. So the idea of that is it's supposed to be web crawl data that could be used to make sense of this. So there's that. The other piece of this that could be valuable is PubSub Hubbub, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
So PubSub Hubbub is designed for this problem of what's updated when. And the idea is you have a PubSub Hubbub server, and you publish your stuff to that, and people who want it subscribe to that server and say, call me when it's updated. And there's a verification protocol to check that they are who they say they are, and the callback URL works. So then you post your thing to there, and then it does the fan out of that to lots of, to all the people who subscribed. And those are chainable, so you could actually build PubSub Hubbub networks. So that's still there. That was actually part of the Reader infrastructure. There's one that's hosted by Google that Brett Slatkin built that's still running and that Feeder was plugged into. I hope they'll keep that up as well. So what's kind of happening is that somebody called it the breakup of the Soviet Union. It's like all these old battles that were frozen when this thing takeover are coming back again now. So we're going to have an interesting discussion in protocol space for the next few weeks as we try and put these together. So I'm, in some ways it's annoying that Google have done this. It's very annoying that Google never did a proper API for it in the first place.
And we've got this sort of weird reverse engineered thing. But this may, we may be able to build something interesting and open out of this. But that's my hope for a big chunk of this.
So to be clear, the fact that Feedly and I presume others, I'm looking at BazQux, BazQux.com that imports your OPML and gives you a very kind of Google Reader-like interface. And you mentioned the old reader. The fact that these companies do this isn't really a solution. You don't want a million of these going around. What you really want is a centralized repository.
You want, but it depends how they're doing it. What you really want is to define a good API between the cache of all that's changed and the client side app. And at the moment, there's an API that was designed by a bunch of guys at Google for their particular purposes and is being used by other apps for that. It would make sense to spend a bit of time, you know, converging that together and saying what is the good, you know, API between that. So that may be a conversation that's going on. But the other part is, you know, we've had the other thing is that, you know, a lot of this infrastructure is creaky as anything. You know, the feeds are messy things. That most of them are invalid. And you have to have a lot of there's a lot of, you know, if you look at the universal feed parser, which is the best feed parser that I know about, it has something like 3,500 test cases that it runs to, and most of them are bad feeds and how to deal with them, and they grew from finding bad feeds. Mark Pilgrim spent a big chunk of time getting that right, and a lot of us fed stuff into that. So the assumption that, you know, feeds are these beautiful things that work is actually, There's most of them are broken, and there's a lot of fudging that makes that sticks them together.
It's really a shame. I mean, Google was doing the crawling. Google had the code. Wasn't much to maintain it. I first thought, oh, this is a great opportunity for companies like Feedly. Black Pixel, which owns NetNewsWire, says, hey, good news. We're working on new versions for the Mac, the iPhone, and the iPad. That was a great news reader on the Mac side. An opportunity for them, but really not really the ideal long-term solution.
Well, the challenge is who's using this? You know, the reason this is shut down is it's because this is those of us who were the text heavy web.
I'm not sure that's the case. I have to think it has more to do with Google pushing Google Plus than it does with the lack of use of the Google Reader. Same reason they took out Share.
They haven't had that many, you know, it's never had that many users, but it's had lots of usage, if you see what I mean.
Right.
The people who use it intensively.
Right.
But it is those of us who read long-form text, and that is, you know, we're a small minority of the web these days. So the question is, do we preserve this sort of long-form text parallel infrastructure, or do we try and merge it with the Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest flow of millions of updates that are built on sort of similar ideas, but with a very different sort of cadence of update.
Dave Weiner himself said when he heard about this, well, you know, the inbox model is kind of out of date. The news river model makes more sense. That Twitter.
I totally agree with him.
Yeah.
I've had a reader configured to be a river for a while. I mean, you can turn off the unread counts, and that makes it much less inboxy.
Yeah.
And then you can decide which, you know, you can pick a what it is. It's a sort of series of rivers. You can put them in folders, and then you can get a river for each folder. And that's the piece that I find useful. I end up with like one main one that I look at most of the time, and I have some other ones that I'll check now and then.
Yeah.
And if you look, you know, Facebook has just made their redesign thing is kind of that. They've got tabs that you switch between to see different rivers in there. And obviously the Twitter, the various Twitter clients that give you columns that I think that are now mostly owned by Twitter have that sort of worldview as well. So I agree that the river is right and that when we are converging on that view, but there is value in having these rarely updated ones that you look at as well.
Dave says in a conversation with Max Levchin on Twitter, he says, so it looks like there are three possible outcomes. This is Dave Weiner, one of the instrumental guys in RSS. He says Google Reader's demise, one, Google Reader's demise is also the end of RSS, he says, which seems to me is Google's desired outcome based on other things they've done. Two, as market develops,
or A-Market develops, but we're unable to get the new features into it that simplify the subscription process so it has a chance, like Twitter. Or three, a new dominant reader comes about, and if they're good, then maybe something good happens. He says, I don't think there's the slightest possibility of that, number three, happening. People in tech are too insular. They don't study prior art or even study their competition enough to know where the problems are, much less where the potential solutions are. You think more likely a mix between one and two, a continued decline for RSS, and more reliance on big companies that couldn't care less, like Twitter. That's depressing. I know. Right. Yeah, that's a depressing outcome.
Well, that's the thing, you know. Dave Weiner's blocked me on Twitter, so I can't read what he's tweeting, but I can still read his blog.
Good old Dave.
So there is a difference of... I still see retweets sometimes. But there is a difference there is a difference between the centralization and the decentralized thing. And he's right. You know, the stuff he built was decentralized. It meant lots of us could build on it.
Right.
Anita and I were reminiscing about this. But you know, we were able to build these parallel things that had an interop layer. And it was a not beautiful interop layer, but it worked. We could make it, we could glue it together. And the difficulty is that lots of the things that were built since were effectively blogging within one company. So if you looked at, even Delicious was like, oh, it's a link blog, except that the tags bridge across Delicious. Isn't that nice? We've got a link there. Tumblr is exactly that. Tumblr is a blog with an update system that feeds inside itself so that you can repost things and they stay within Tumblr. And and obviously, Twitter and Medium and, the other things that are like this have those same characteristics, which is it's very easy for them to interact with themselves, and it gets harder and harder for them to interact with each other. And one of the nice things about, 10 years ago in blogging was that we had multiple mature clients that actually behave fairly well with each other, publishing things and reading things. And that is the piece that's sort of been damaged by the centralization stuff. Maybe this is a chance for us to try and rebuild that. But, I spent a chunk of time trying to do this with Open Social, trying to make these feeds interoperate, and it's hard.
It is a hard
problem. It's hard to get companies to realize it's in their interest to do this, especially when they've got a large user base and they like the ability to shut people down. Facebook did it again this week. Somebody got started building a successful messaging thing, and they said, we're shutting you down, bye.
Yeah.
They like that ability. And to some extent, you need the ability to shut down spammers. We did have a spam problem with blogs. There was a time when Blogger itself was a giant spam factory because it was very easy to set up scripts to generate blogs and post there and feed them into the rest of the infrastructure. And it took a while for Google to realize that and clean that out. So there are problems with this and how you plug this together. It is hard to maintain who gets to talk to whom with this, but we've come up with models. The following model, and the subscription model actually does make some sense, and we've seen that idea spreading out into other places. The challenge is, as I think Dave was saying in that post you quoted, making that work in a way that bridges between the systems is the valuable piece and the piece that we need to, spend some time doing interop on.
Let you choose how you want to see. He also points out, he says, I never use Google Reader. I didn't trust Google. And he says, and make sure if you're going to support something like this, that it has a business model, that you're paying for it so that there's some incentive for them to keep running it.
I mean, there's always a chance that a company who makes a thing you use is going to shut it down, right? I mean, whether it's for you or not.
Right.
But I see Dave's point about the idea that we're all publishing these feeds that are standard, and that your blogs aren't going away. You're going to you can export your OPML and take it elsewhere, right? But when you're publishing within Twitter, within Facebook, within Google+, the whole publishing and sharing mechanism is all within that one product. And what happens when those shut down?
Right. Right.
There isn't an OPML happening to export. There's not, right. We see it happening, right? So
the Twitter API is shutting down. In fact, they just tweeted that they're going to do a blackout test in 5 minutes. So my Twitter client will stop working in 5 minutes.
What?
The blackout test for the API 1.0, right? Because they're rolling out API 1.1. So they're doing blackout tests to see how the clients respond to the shutdown.
To see who's still using 1.0. And Kevin, yours is using 1.0. You know that?
Yeah, I'm on Echophone.
Echophone.
An Echo Phone has been nuked by Twitter, and so they haven't on the Mac. They've still got an Android one. And so they haven't moved it to 1.1. So it will start 4.10-ing at me for five minutes, and I've got to go and I'll sit and watch it go and go inside to myself and then try it again. The other thing depressing. That Twitter are deprecating with this is all the feeds. The RSS feeds
are gone.
For Twitter. Those have been nuked. The Adam feeds are gone. They've all disappeared.
Because so nobody cares. Nobody really even thinks about this except we geeks.
That was the thing. So I finally got my Twitter archive that lets you download the whole thing. I was obviously late in the queue because I had too many or something. And I downloaded it, and then I was reading. I thought, oh, what was I talking about, you know, in December? And I was talking about plugging Twitter into Technorati and how it looked like a blog, and there was RSS feeds, and I could blog claim it. And it was like, oh, yeah, I remember when there was infrastructure for this. The other thing that strikes me is that at least being able to download that, I can now upload that entire thing somewhere else and at least preserve that piece. That is good. But it loses the things I retweeted, and it loses a lot of the connections between tweets that were there, because those, if you download, you know, they sort of violate their own user interface guidelines. If you embed a tweet in your page, you're supposed to use their magic JavaScript that will then show who the thread of conversations. But they don't do that with the archive one. You have to click through to Twitter for that to show up. And so that relies on the Twitter backend preserving that too. And they actually give you a dump of what the current API looks like in JSON. That's what the file looks like. So the actual export is pretty good. I don't know if you spent time on this playing with them, Gina, but...
Yeah, I have played with it. I mean, the thing about the export is that you do it once, and then that's it. But your tweet stream is kind of a living thing, right? So you'd have to do it every single time. You know, it changes, right? And then what you said, it doesn't get related tweets or tweets that you retweet. I mean, this is, obviously, I've done a lot of thinking about this with ThinkUp, because ThinkUp kind of gets everything, all your links, all your friends, everything. Twitter...
When you set up ThinkUp the first time, you could say, here's my archive, and you could slurp that whole file in. That would save you a lot of...
Like, yeah, we have one of our contributors is writing that code right now. So you can pre-populate it. But you're right, like when you don't get the related tweets, right? Like your mentions, when you retweet something. But Twitter is in a tough spot, right? Like what if you retweet something and then that gets deleted, or someone mentions you or applies to you, but then they delete it? You know, it's for them to provide that data in the archive that can never be deleted, right? So like they're only giving you your data back, but the reality is that within a social context, your data is kind of inextricably connected to other people's data because it's messages back and forth to one another, you know? So it's a difference between Gmail. You know, if Leo sends me a reply to Gmail, he understands that he can't take that back or delete it, right? Because he has now put it in my inbox and I have a copy and I am entitled to that copy because it's a reply to me. But that is not the case on Twitter. So when the politician accidentally, tweets a picture of his junk, right, he should be able to delete that. And clients are all supposed to respect the fact that it has been deleted and deleted on their side as well. The cache copy should be deleted. That's part of Twitter's terms of service.
Hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, yeah.
So does that mean ThinkUp has to delete it?
Yeah, ThinkUp deletes. ThinkUp looks for deletes. And it's terribly inefficient. But yeah, we check for deletes because it's just part of...
You have to poll for deletes? You can't... It doesn't push you deletes?
Yes. It does not push deletes. We have to poll for them. It's terribly inefficient.
That's bizarre.
Well, okay. If you're not depressed enough now, let's talk about Google pulling ad blocking apps from the Play Store because it violates the developer agreement. So AdBlock Plus, AdBlocker, AdAway, and AdFree no longer downloaded from the Play Store. I guess that's not surprising, since Google's business is, in fact, ads.
Ads. Yeah. I mean, this seems pretty straightforward to me. We talked about this on All About Android last night. I mean, there's a section in the Google Play user, developer agreement that you agree not to upload apps that are going to interfere with third-party services, right? And that's what ad-blocking apps do. I saw a lot of people really upset about this, feeling like Google was lowering the hammer and they were, being controlling and they have the right to run whatever they want on their phones. And that may be the case, but there's lots of ways you can get an APK onto your phone. It doesn't have to happen through the Play Store. I truthfully didn't have a problem with it. I thought it made sense. And you agree to those terms when you upload, right, an app to the Play Store.
I don't know if you listen to Security Now before this show, but Steve kind of
kind of blew us all away with a piece written by an anonymous hacker and posted on Bitbucket. The guy is, I'm sure, going to try to preserve his anonymity, because what he did is he wrote a distributed port scanner that scanned every internet address looking for a variety of things, but most importantly, looking for open telnet ports. Once he found them, he tried logging in using generic root logins like root or blank blank or admin root, that kind of thing. And he was able to create a botnet of 420,000 clients all over the world that he totally owned. Some of these are appliances, things like Hewlett-Packard printers sitting on the open internet. And once he created that botnet, he continued the scans. He was able to scan pretty much the entire internet. And what's just shocking is the number of computers, many of them running Linux, openly accepting telnet requests without secure telnet passwords, completely available for use by bad guys in all sorts of DDoSing and so forth. Just kind of an amazing story. We'll put the link in the show notes. It's you can search for the Internet Census 2012.bitbucket.org.
Well, the interesting thing is the image he built of the which addresses are actually in use.
Yeah.
And, you know, which is which has these, like, you know, big black areas in there, which are IP address, you know, slash eights that companies got a long time ago and are not actually using, including Apple and Ford and Merck and a whole bunch of others.
Yep.
So the top left corner of the graph is all these, like, black unused IP addresses that now arguably they're using them to root internally, and you know, maybe they have got that many computers, but I suspect it's slightly unlikely for some of them.
Well,
and it might be nice if they could release some of those. And
let's not, because if we move to IPv6, all of this goes away.
But well, that's the real fix. But you know, that was the thing that, you know, the chart was, that was interesting to me was him,
right,
showing that and saying
all the unused IP addresses.
The IP address space is exhausted, but yes, but most of these aren't publicly advertised,
right,
so they're being
right.
used inside firewalls where you could use more easily set up IPv6, or you could do a giant NAT. Not that one so much as that one's fun too.
This is an animated GIF that shows ping requests as they go across the world, and it even has the Terminator line, so you can see day, night, and so forth.
Yeah,
that's a fun one.
Which one?
Pretty.
The other one is the square one. The square one. That's it. You have to sort of look at it, and you probably won't be able to see it on the stream. But if you look at the link, you can. Each of the boxes is a class A address, a slash 8 address.
And so many of them are dark.
Yeah. Now the two in the top right are the reserved ones. One's for multicast, and one's for the local routing one. And then the ones that are lit up are where there are actually active things that they found by crawling. And if you go, there's another one that
some of these dark ones. I mean, some of the dark ones are just they're not accepting ICMP ping requests, but those big black blocks are obviously whole ranges that are out of use.
Yeah. So the top left corner if you actually look at the allocation map, there's an XKCD cartoon of it, but you can actually see the names, not in this one, but in the other somewhere else on the page. You can see the names of the companies that own entire slash 8 addresses, including Apple, and it is a list of companies that were big a long time ago, because when they were allocated,
right?
You know,
right.
Ford has an entire slash 8, which is unless they're actually putting one per car, that seems excessive.
So you're not too worried about the threat of massive DDoS attacks and XKCD.
That's actually all the bits that are actually green there have now been allocated. But if you look at the top left-hand corner, there's a whole bunch of companies that have HP and DEC and, you know, IBM and MIT and Apple and Bell Labs and Xerox.
That's awesome.
Who were on the net at the time and grabbed an entire chunk of address space. Also, the amount we got for multicast is slightly excessive. That was.
Yeah, nobody uses that anymore, do they?
It's hard to. Nobody roots it very well.
Was it M-Bone? Was it the M-Bone and stuff like that?
It was M-Bone. But David Sheraton grabbed a huge chunk of that with some idea about using it for file distribution. It's mostly empty, which is a shame. You know, it could be used for a bit more. But so, yeah, there's a... Anyway, what was I getting at with that? So the point about the botnets is that they managed to build this botnet that would do this and do this benign thing, but it makes it pretty clear how easy it is to construct botnets.
Right.
If these guys can do...
He
can do this and publish this and say, this is how I did it and this is what's going on. It's pretty clear that other people are doing this and they're not being quite so subtle about it.
Yeah. Fascinating. I don't know what to say about it. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will get your, you got a new thing, a new number, a new something? I'll give you a moment to come up with one, Kevin Marks. Gina's tip, I'll have a tool. But first, a reminder that if you're not backing up, now's the time to do it with Carbonite.com. Carbonite online backup is everything you need from a great backup service. It's automatic, so you don't have to remember it. It's continuous, so when you change a file, it's automatically backed up. And it's in the cloud, so even if the worst happens, fire, flood, tornado, somebody steals all your stuff, you still got a copy of all that precious data. And all of this, $59 a year per computer, less than $5 a month. And by the way, it includes cloud storage, so you can log on to your Carbonite account on any computer or use their free apps, and there's your stuff. You can download it, use it. It's really a nice tool. I want you to try it free for 2 weeks. Carbonite.com. From financials to family photos, Carbonite keeps what's important to you safe. And that's real peace of mind for $59 a year. If you use our offer code TWIG, you can try it free for 2 weeks. You don't need a credit card. And you'll get 14 months when you buy, an extra 2 free months. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code TWIG. If you're not backing up, get going. Back it up to get it back with Carbonite. Gina Trapani, your tool of the week.
So my tip of the week, I pretty much never print out email, right? No one prints stuff out anymore. But I do once a year when I do my taxes, because all year long I file expenses into a certain Gmail label, receipts for expenses, stuff that I buy online. So I was putting together my taxes, and I had this problem where I had to print out all the messages within a particular Gmail label, the label for my itemized deductions. And I found this Chrome app called Gmail Print All. So if you're in the situation where you just need to print out an entire label, or just archive it to one single giant PDF file, you can do this. Gmail Print All for Chrome. You launch the app, you give it access to your Gmail. I basically just gave it access to do my print job, and then I revoked access, and it will just take all the messages within a particular label and either print them out or output them to PDF. Like I said, probably not something you have to do very often, but it saved me a ton of time when I was getting my stuff ready for my accountant this year. So maybe to help you out too.
Now, I hope you printed a PDF and you sent your accountant the PDF. You gave him a stack of paper?
No, I didn't give him a stack. Well, I have to go through the stack of paper, make a spreadsheet, and then I just send him the final number. Doesn't want the receipts. He just wants the totals. But I liked it because I'm crazy. I like to keep a hard copy. But yeah, I do have a PDF on my hard drive that I back up to my regular backup sources as well.
Right. Do you use Google?
Redundancy.
Do you use Google Print ever?
I haven't. Cloud Print, you mean?
Cloud Print. I love
that. Yeah, I haven't. Do you? Really?
Yeah, well, it turned out I didn't know this, but I have an Epson WorksForce printer that's Cloud Printerware, so I turn it on, and it's just kind of cool that you can print from anywhere
to the office.
To my home.
Yeah.
I go home, and then I get the printout. Well, I could do it at the office, too. Yeah. We have one at the office, too.
You can also do stuff where, as long as you're logged in to Chrome, it will, even if you don't have to have a special printer, as long as Chrome's open and on the computer, and the computer's connected to the printer, you can print to that printer.
Yep.
You mean if you have another computer connected to a printer?
Right.
And
so, at home,
awesome.
I have my desktop PC, and that has a computer printer attached to it. From anywhere, as long as I'm printing via Chrome, I can print to that printer at home, and software.
The computer has to be sort of awake, and Chrome has to be launched on.
Right, so it has to be powered on, and not only does Chrome have to be open, but it has to be signed in to whatever Google account I'm using.
Just set up Google Cloud Print if you have a printer that supports
really
that.
That's really
nice. Yeah, or print that's to really any nice. FedEx office, which is kind of weird. Yeah, it's in right here in the Cloud Print settings. Print to FedEx office. So I have my printer at work, I have my printer at home, or I could print to a FedEx office.
See, I need a printer in my accountant's office so I can just send my
exactly.
all my huge giant PDF to his office and be like, you sort through my receipts.
Exactly.
Thanks.
It's pretty cloud print is pretty amazing. I really like it.
I did try setting this up at my mom's house when I was over there, but she keeps unplugging the printer and putting it in the cupboard, so it didn't really work.
Yeah, okay, that's one thing. You have to have a network enabled printer that's plugged in.
Yeah.
Not in a cupboard.
Yeah.
She only gets a sandwich, she needs to print things, which is reasonable. I'm thinking, oh, I can send her little printed things.
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool? You can send her snail mail, but it's really coming out of her printer. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I was surprised. I didn't know I have a Workforce Pro. I didn't know it was Google Cloud Print. I just thought, and the way you find out is you actually find out what the IP address of your network printer is and you surf to it. And if you have settings, you can turn on Cloud Print, which is kind of cool.
Nice.
So worth checking out. Did you come up with an alternative number, Kevin? I've stalled. All I can.
My number was what I said earlier, which is 83% of browsers now support SVG, which is more than the 80% that support Flash. I think that's really significant. And the take home from that is make sure that if you build something that lets you upload images, it lets you upload SVG too, because that is going to be more useful. Because you know, if you're not sure what SVG is, SVG is a vector format for images. So you can do something as a series of lines, and then you can make it as big or small as you like, and it'll still look good, and you don't have to have lots of versions. And the reason this is getting more and more useful is that we now have screens that vary a number of pixels by several orders of magnitude, and so web designers are going, oh, God, I've got to put different size images in for all these Retina users, and, oh, there's people who've got really big Chromebooks with lots of pixels.
Not that, Chad, what I've got. That's something later coming up.
That's
there
something.
You go.
There you go. So
all the current versions of IE, Firefox, Chrome, Safari, Opera, iOS, Safari, Opera Mini, Android, and BlackBerry browsers all support SVG, which is great.
So its time has come, which means that if you're – and the sort of number that support Flash has been going down, whether it's SVG is going up, and I think they've just about crossed – which means that if you're thinking about, oh, I should generate something in a vector format, Flash is no longer the way to go.
Is there a tool that you recommend for creating a scalable vector graphics, SVG?
The Google drawing thing that's in Docs will actually do it fairly easily. Okay. If you just want a cloud-based one, it'll save as SVG. Illustrator saves as SVG if you're already using Illustrator. And there's what's it called?
Inkscape.
Yeah. That's it. I was going to say Inkblot. Inkscape, which is a...
It's an open source illustrator, basically.
It's an open source illustrator, but yeah. It has, you know, it uses X Window, so it's a bit weird. But the other thing is you can generate it programmatically. If you're running something that generates code, writing it in code, writing it to generate SVG is actually a pretty smart idea because they tend to be a lot...
That would be more like a flash animation or something like that.
Yeah. Another tip there is if you go to Wikimedia... The Wikipedia image cache thing, they're starting to gather useful art in SVG, like company logos and things. So they're getting people to either upload them or make them and put them there. So there are resources for this too. So that was my.
We have an Illustrator version of our logo. We should probably make an SVG version.
You should make an SVG one and make that available. Because it will actually, you know, the big point of this is that it works on all the phones. It works on all the phones and all the tablets.
Right. And it's very lightweight.
And it's very, yeah. I had an Apple. I uploaded it to my Keep, which didn't actually work. Hang on. Yeah, so I've got the original Apple logo on Wikimedia. Hang on, I'll stick that somewhere in the chat maybe. It's tiny.
Yeah. But it's scalable, so it can look...
It's scalable, so it'll draw arbitrary size, and the shape was the same.
Look at that. Beautiful. Of course, you can't use that anymore because it's the old rainbow logo, but...
Right. Yeah, but, you know, that one's nicer than the current logo. But the point is, you can do quite complicated vector things, and you can zoom them arbitrarily, and they'll work everywhere, and they're smaller than, you know, than a GIF for that size stuff. Now, you know, they can be... and smaller than a ping for when you start doing retina scale things. So that's my nerdy tip. The other tip I had, which was a link, is I went to Google Dev Fest, which was a developer conference they ran last week. And there was a great talk by Kit Hodgson, it's at ki.tt/devfest, which was her Automate All the Things talk, which is basically very much a sort of life hacker for nerds thing about how you should be using the command line and cron jobs and all these sort of tools.
Yeah, this is the original life hacks kind of philosophy. Yeah,
use cron jobs. Come on, don't be lazy.
But it was very nerdy, but I really enjoyed the talk, and she had a bunch of ideas that I hadn't heard. I like that quote, though. If you go back
to the Einlein quote?
Einlein quote.
Progress isn't made by early risers. It's made by lazy men trying to find easier ways to do something. I'd agree with that.
And there's a huge list of links and resources there. So, and I'm sure there'll be a video of the talk up, but it was one of those talks where I was like, that's really cool. And it reminded me.
I would agree, too. I would agree. Everything from command launchers like Alfred and Launchy to command line scripts from Bash, Flickr Uploader, Trovebox, alias.sh, great site. I love collecting these things. These are great.
Yeah.
I love them.
Yeah.
Gina's right in there with to do that.
Yeah, this is what made me do Life Hack. I was like, the original Life Hack talk was really about this. It was about using Bash scripts and keeping everything in plain text and using Quicksilver. And to do text was really kind of born out of this kind of ethos.
I wish.
I love this stuff.
You know, they always said this about George Morrow, who wrote the Morrow computer. He wouldn't buy off-the-shelf software. He'd just write everything himself. I wish I had the time just to automate everything, and live in the terminal. I'd probably use Emacs and code in Lisp. Mm-hmm. I'd wear a beret, grow my beard long.
He'd drink tea.
Drink tea.
Fancy tea.
And be very cranky if anybody bothered me. Gina Trapani, you can only make me smile. Gina Trapani is in Brooklyn.
But
that's okay. She joined us. She is the founding editor of Life Hacker. So there. The creator of todo.txt. She is also the author of ThinkUp, although many now work on it. ThinkUp app at thinkup.com.
Yes. Great show today. We missed Jeff, but great show. Thanks for joining
us.
Always
Kevin. Fun. And boy, it couldn't have been a better time to get Kevin Marks on, because I forgot all about Technorata. You did all this reader RSS stuff.
Yes, sir.
You're the prototype for all of this stuff.
Man
in the trenches. So nice to have you.
Spent a chunk of time trying to understand that stuff a long time ago. Yeah.
Really quick, and I'm so glad that Keep launched before the show rather than after the show. Someone on Twitter had said, hey, you guys didn't talk about the implications of Keep on Google Glass, which I thought was very
Of course, Glass would be an input device, wouldn't it, for Keep?
Okay, Glass, keep this.
Keep this. Keep this. You just, that's all you have to say. Keep this. Glass, keep this.
Keep this.
Now I want it.
What's going to arrive first, your Pixel or your Explorer Edition glasses?
Ooh, I want both. No word's gone out about the Explorer Edition, right? That's just since Google.
I haven't heard a thing.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you. Kevin Marks, anywhere you want to plug TunnelVision.tv. You're looking for a producer if you want to. Help Kevin and Heather and everybody get that show back. Deborah, get that show back on track.
That'll be fun.
TunnelVision.tv.
Also, want to plug Salesforce Chatter for Android and iOS, which was updated this week. And so if you're a Salesforce user, you should check that out, because it added the classic chatter is still there, but it's also got the ability to upload different kinds of records and create them and view them in it. So it's actually quite a significant improvement.
Fantastic. That's salesforce.com.
Right on.
Yeah. I think it's also
chatter.com. Kevin, you bring the birds chirping to the show as well.
Yeah. Tweet. Those tweets are patented now. You can't, we're going to get a takedown for sure. Kevin Marks in his garden. And by the way, he lives in an orange grove, apparently.
Those look like beautiful orange trees.
They look good.
Kind of a former orange grove, yeah.
That's where I was, that's how my parents got me to move to California. They said, we'll be able to walk out on our back porch and pick an orange and juice it for breakfast.
Yeah, seriously, it's so California. Avocado tree, saying that blew my mind. I moved here from Brooklyn. I was like, you mean you can just pick an avocado off a tree? That's insanity. Amazing. They're just avocados on the ground and oranges.
It is the promised land.
Definitely got oranges.
It is. Thank you, guys. Thanks for joining us. We do Twig at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 2000 UTC on twit.tv. Watch live. Love it if you chat and be part of the show. But if you can't, we make on-demand versions available after the fact. twit.tv/twig and wherever you find fine internet broadcasts aggregated and served up via RSS. There's an orange. Look, he picked one. Is that an annoying orange?
Only
if you're in the snow on the East Coast right now. Gina, you went back east just in time for a snowstorm.
Oh, man, I was like, oh, I got to pack a winter coat. I was kind of scrambling my house before I left. It was like 80 degrees in San Diego the other day.
Yeah, nope.
Yeah,
you picked the wrong
not here.
Time to travel. I guess that's all there is to say, but we'll see you next time on Twig. Bring your oranges.